The Next CMO podcast explores topics that are on the minds of forward-thinking marketing leaders, from vision and strategy to leadership and emerging technologies. The Next CMO is sponsored by Planful, a platform to build, manage, and measure your marketing plan, track all your marketing spend, and connect your budget with outcomes to measure your ROI. Check it out at planful.com/marketing. Your CFO will love you for it. I'm your host, Scott Todaro, a 32-year marketing veteran, 7-time head of marketing, and co-author of the book, The Next CMO.
Welcome to another podcast edition of The Next CMO. Today, I'm joined by Greg Brooks. He's got a fantastic background today. He's going to talk about all kinds of wonderful things, not only search related, but AI. And then how do you actually deal with this as a marketing leader? And so, Greg, he's got an unbelievable background. And I think one of the things that's most interesting about him is that he is a former professional poker player. Now, as somebody that is an amateur poker player, this is a little scary. I don't want to play with him. I had my clock clean many times. So he's the one thing that he took away from it, and I think he's going to share it with you today, is that he learned how to read people. And I think anybody that really understands marketing understands that if you understand your audience at a detailed level, especially the psychographics of what makes them tick, that is a huge skill that you can apply towards marketing. But he's done all kinds of things. So he was one of the founders of Avocado Mattress, which is a successful business. He was an entrepreneur that got that up and running. He's still doing it today. And he has background in managing fairly sizable marketing budgets, up to 8 figures at Common Bond. And the other thing that he's doing right now is he's the CMO of Search Tides. And so he's going to talk to us quite a bit about AI. And search and your favorite vendor out there, Google, and what's going to happen with those guys. So without further ado, let's turn it over to you, Greg. And if you want to start talking about poker, you know, that's great. Or we can just dive directly into whether you think Google is dead.
That's great. Can I talk about whether Google's dead and just make poker analogies as a, you know, now? Yeah.
Yes, I think we would all understand that. That's perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. No, poker was really interesting. I got started off when I was in college. I was trying to make some extra money to go visit my long-distance girlfriend at the time. And I played my freshman year of college for over 2,000 hours. So I had kind of like software that tracked that. And I was terrible, Scott. The only difference between us, I literally was terrible for a longer period of time. And then one day that just stopped happening.
Oh, no. That's unbelievable. It must have been fun, though.
It was fun, and it just felt like a big video game. And there's numbers on a screen. There's faceless opponents. I'm just trying to be the best. I think there were two types of really, quote, professionals. One type was, I'm trying to play a limit that I can win at. I'm just going to sit there all day, every day, and I'm just going to keep trying to kind of trying to juice it. And the other one, which is the group that I fell into, was, this really does feel like so much like a video game that I just want to get to the high score and I want to get to the final level. And so I just got my butt beat constantly. And when I started beating more people, then I would play harder opponents and it was just an endless cycle. Yeah.
That's awesome. I have to ask one question. What okay. was your best read? When you were looking at people, what was the greatest tell? Especially if you could do it in context for all these wonderful marketers out there that seem to not really understand body language.
Okay, so best read in context for marketers out there is a behavior shift. So it's you are typically, I'll give you a couple examples. If you ask somebody what their favorite color is, that's essentially memory recall. If you ask somebody what they ate for breakfast last week, that's memory recall. If you ask somebody who is going to lie to you, they're no longer recalling memory. They're going to invent something. And so the way that they grab that information is going to be different. Everybody thinks it's, oh, if somebody's got their arms crossed, they're uncomfortable. It's, first of all, that's not a real thing. You could be cold. Things exist in, right? Like, how could you imagine? You're like, this person doesn't like this conversation. It is 65 degrees in this room. This person is cold. They're wearing t-shirts and sandals. So you have to, it's about clusters, but really it's more about everyone is unique and does their own version. So what's the baseline look like? And I think people are like that too. And marketers, if I've seen an ad 5 times and I get served an ad for the 6th time and I clicked on it, That is like really, really meaningful. That's a meaningful behavior shift. So what does that mean and what are the implications of that?
Fantastic. So can you read Google at this point?
Yes, but for different reasons. We're cheating with Google. We literally just, we've scraped enough pages and we've crawled enough search results pages where we just kind of really understand the odds and ends of the algorithm. But yeah, no, we're reading it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. So what are you seeing with Google? I mean, obviously they have the antitrust and monopolistic litigation. What are you seeing out there?
I think the biggest thing to really focus on is to think about people searching on the internet for information, which is kind of what search is, and that's what Google's become. And think about it in terms of how is that going to evolve over time. And so to answer your question, I think Google has gone from something like 91.6% of all relevant searches about a year and a half ago when all the GPT models started coming out. And after all the conversations about the obituaries and the death of Google, that number has decreased down to around 90.6%. So for sure, a decrease, but also still retaining the massive overmajority, probably in the midst of the lowest overall sentiment about the future of Google. So I actually don't see it going away. I actually think that Google has the opportunity to be the best AI result out of anything on the internet, including OpenAI, including Perplexity. And the reason is you have major publishers blocking GPT models and blocking Perplexity, even though Perplexity's got a little loophole that they use. But zero websites block Google. They want Google crawling every single page on their website. And Google, therefore, has access to this giant data set that every single competitor does not. They also have access to another giant data set that every single other competitor does not. And that's all private and unlisted videos on YouTube. So if you put those two things together in a GPT race, which is truly about like the data set for processing, Google has these two crazy advantages that can never actually be replicated. And as this sub-industry kind of just gets further along, the skill in getting a GPT to, quote, learn is going to commoditize. And so the thing that's going to remain uniqueness is data set. Now, Google, so far with AI overviews, has been absolutely throwing away that, you know, that advantage. So nobody is saying that it has to go a certain way. But I think when you get new technology and you get a lot of people who are struggling to figure out the old technology, they're really quick to want to throw it away. And I think we are seeing a decent amount of that currently.
You talk about the new technology. Are you seeing a lot of CMOs out there that understand how to adopt AI, or are they seeing what the differences are between what they're doing today with investing in search advertising? You know, is there a big difference that you're seeing?
I think that AI exists today as this overlay layer on top of marketing execution. So I can do things 20 times faster if I'm using ChatGPT to help be a co-pilot with me in various capacities, or Perplexity or something like that. In terms of using AI to fully replace, I don't see as big of a gap, because the equivalent's not human beings doing stuff. It's mostly like software. So you have SaaS. Because if there was a big enough opportunity to this date where somebody wanted to make it easier for a human, we created software around that. And so the AI is iterating on top of human. It's like how companies are starting to build internal models to try to like cancel the need to use some, you know, HubSpot, or the need to use Salesforce. So like that is where a lot of innovation is occurring. In terms of the technology that's push button, where it makes your marketing better than where it was previously, that doesn't exist yet. That will exist in the future. That might be ChatGPT 10.0 or 15.0 or something like that. It absolutely will exist. But technology historically has always been on top of the expertise, on top of the skill set that we have. And so what CMOs really need to do is to empower their teams to use this everywhere, to use these tools everywhere. to use the technology everywhere, because that's really the greatest level of output. And it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that I've heard marketing leaders say is that, you know, this is great for my team, especially for writing messaging. You know, people start it, they'll get 60, 70% there by starting with ChatGPT, but this really isn't a tool necessarily for decision-making yet. And so I don't think it's impacted, in my experience with them, it has not impacted the management level yet. It may get there at some point where you're starting to analyze data and just kicking out recommendations, but you're still going to have that human interaction, and the human ultimately has to make the decision. You're never going to leave that to the computer to do it. Have you seen anything on what I would call the more strategic side of marketing, or innovation side of marketing, that you would see a marketing leader use AI for? Or is it primarily for tactical execution of projects and writing projects and messaging, things along those lines?
I think you can use AI tools for project planning and creation the same way that you can use them for execution. I think that there's an asterisk next to anything with data, because then you have companies saying, that's sensitive, I don't want that being, you know, that's non-public. And that's true on one hand. And on the other hand, it's also leaders who are just like, I want to still be important for as long as possible. My stuff can't be. So I think eventually it's just going to all get there, which is okay, because ultimately it's just about being able to use the printing press when it came out, being able to use the, you know, a more automated sewing solution when that came out. You can tell I was not present during the Industrial Revolution, so my references to sewing is not, it's not the same, but that's typically where things wind up being. And there is this sort of mental and emotional change that I think is going to be required in a lot of leaders, and for sure marketing leaders too, because this was kind of what was happening during COVID. I mean, what was the big metric that you, as a leader, what was the metric that said how important you were? And it was headcount. How much headcount do you have? How many people do you have under you? That was the big metric. If, you know, the more important I am. And then what happened with AI? What does that do? Shrinks headcount. What does that do? Decreases the rate at which you increase headcount. So what you actually have are these like incentive structures where someone doesn't want that to be the case because they feel good with more headcount, but in reality, it's going to be better for the business. And what are we going to do? So I think there's a little bit of that too.
Yeah, without a doubt. I've always said that CMOs measure their worth based on the size of their team and the size of their budget. So if you cut their team and you cut their budget, they feel worthless. And, you know, it's interesting because if they measured themselves on ROI, then that would be the ultimate measurement. So actually having smaller, more efficient teams generating more ROI for the business is actually what an executive is supposed to do. And I think this is where a lot of marketing leaders lose sight of what's really important to the business. And they get involved in like building an empire. If you do that, you're probably going to end up just like the other marketers that are gone within 1 year, 9 months. So, I see you smile. I'm sure you've seen it. And by the way, congratulations on 10 years of being a CMO. That's like off the charts. You must be doing something right.
So or nothing.
Or not right.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, sometimes
just
nothing
the
is
line
the best.
Perfectly. Just telling the line perfectly.
So let's talk about, I mean, as a marketing leader, you know, you've done a lot of things in the last 10 years, and you have a background in business, you've got the entrepreneurial experience too. So just CMOs, like thinking broader, what does the future look like for these CMOs that, you know, are trying to adopt the technology, trying to figure out where their place is, what is ROI? We had a discussion earlier that I thought was kind of interesting of where you thought the future was going. I'd like to share it here on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that if you think about what technology does, it creates more consumer choice. And I'll give you one example with content. So there were 3 television stations when TVs came out, then there were 13 channels, then 50 channels, 500. And now we have millions and millions with all different social media channels. The thing that made that possible was I went from needing an entire studio fully staffed
on a few different floors in a giant office building to this device that I walk around with anyways. And so what that leads to is it leads to more consumer choice, because now I don't just have 3 or 50 or 500 channels to choose from. I get to go into the niche of my niche of my niche of things that I'm excited about. And I think we're going to see something similar happen due to AI in the business world. I think it's already starting from the layoffs 2 years ago, last year, you know, any future layoffs that are happening. Rehires are not happening at the same rate because there's just an expectation that output is going to just get better per person, and AI tools are going to enable that to happen. And I think there's validity to that. The flip side of that, Scott, is that you're now going to have one or five people be able to create companies that used to take 5 or 30 people to create. You're going to have that one all-star. Well, now they're like 4 all-stars, and they're going to maybe hang out with 3 other friends who are like that too. And they're going to enter in a market. And so I think you're basically going to get 2 things. You're going to get the Costco from Idiocracy, which is just a giant, giant company that keeps on getting bigger. And you can get your law degree there, and you can get your oil changed, and you can get your nuclear bunker supplies. And then on the other side of it, you're going to have a lot more companies competing for, quote, the rest of the market. And so as a consumer, this is good for me because I now get more individual choice. But as a company, it's going to get more challenging to acquire someone. And so therefore, I need to vocalize what my values are and who I'm right for and really call that out in a more meaningful way and just get this megaphone and shout it from the rooftops everywhere.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about that from a messaging standpoint. You know, in ChatGPT, you can throw in, obviously, who your target audience is and what your central message is and what your product is. But it's a little sketchy, the answers that come out. And I feel like that marketers sometimes are leaning too much on that crutch. The other thing that I worry about is that ChatGPT will give you very generic answers. And what I mean by that is there's not a lot of creativity in the answers. It basically is pulling data from a variety of different places. And, you know, let's face it, all that data they're pulling was written by human beings, right? And you know we're perfect. So it's not quite there yet. Like I see some results and I'm like, oh no. And cause I can tell, you know, team members have put them together. And now being a college professor, it's absolutely amazing to see what people are actually turning in these days. So, it's very, very obvious to see it, but just as far as, performance and, you know, do you really believe that in the short term that this will, I mean, it will increase the output. But do you think it will increase the quality of content and the work that's produced using AI?
That's a good question. My reason why that is or is not the case actually goes back in time to COVID. And what happened at COVID was we basically stopped going into the office. And I noticed, which again, you know, nothing wrong with that. I am at a remote company. Like, so let me be very clear. But what is lost from that is you just lose the ability to level up in ways that you don't know that you're blind, because you see other people and they're more senior in action. You see them for more times of the day and you see more things happen with them. And for example, like when I was at Common Bond, I had my manager was unbelievable. And I completely changed how I thought about so many different things, literally by watching him speak to people that were in unrelated conversations to anything. And I was like, oh, look at how he's motivating. Look at how he's being positive. Look at all of these things, how we're in the trenches and this and this and this is happening. And so I developed a lot like managerially through osmosis. And I know the same thing is true for skill sets, where it's the more time you're spending with somebody. Fast forward to the remote world that we live in, you still get that at a company, but it will be a smaller amount of people who receive that intimate one-on-one with that person. You can still get my time day to day, but not everyone can get my time week to week anymore. But in an office, anyone can see how I'm acting and behaving, and it's not that big of a deal to have more people in a meeting or whatever it is. So I think what we're losing is where the gap between those who have high level experience and those who don't, and you could also say it's true for like really good managerial experience and those who don't, that learning curve is getting longer. It's getting elongated. And so then, so now you have people who are in charge of the execution layer, but they don't have that developing skill set in as accessible as a way as they used to have it. And now they're being put in charge of technology and they don't know how to get it to the point of excellence. So we use ChatGPT to do content related things. And I promise you that it is better than if we had human writers doing it. But from a search perspective, we know exactly what needs to happen to make a pristine piece of written or, you know, video content. And if we didn't have that blueprint, we could use ChatGPT all we wanted to, we'd never get close to the results. So I wonder how much of it is just people not knowing what excellence needs to look like, and then just using this thing, kind of like with your students. If your students know what an excellent paper looks like, and they go on ChatGPT and it spits out some garbage, they could say, this is not it, you know? But if they don't know what that looks like, then it definitely looks it because it's a lot of words and it's got good indentation and talks about all the topics. So I think that's really one of the things that is happening currently.
Yeah, that's going to be different. Difficult for us to really gauge over time because you've got a situation where, I mean, there's an incredible amount of information that it can produce in a relatively short amount of time. I've seen people use it to create whole white papers. But it really robbed a lot of thoughts that I saw out in the working world that people had already created and just kind of reworded them and used them. And it's interesting when you start thinking about things like plagiarism and stuff. I mean, if it is a blatant thought that was created by somebody else that put up on the internet, just because I combine them all into one thing, does that not make it plagiarism? And I think the term, when you take lots of people's ideas and you put them all together, I think it's called research. But if you just take one person's idea, it's plagiarism, right? So, yeah. Those are the things that we need to be careful of, because at the end of the day, if we get too stale, you know, marketing needs differentiation, right? I mean, if you sound like everybody else, you sound like no one. No one's going to be interested in your products. You've got to be able to differentiate. So around this time in the show, we like to ask the fundamental question: if you had the opportunity to give advice to either aspiring CMOs or CMOs that have been doing this for a short amount of time that really could use an extra boost, what would be your best piece of advice that you could give a CMO?
I have to just have one after that intro. That there's so many things I want to say.
Say them. You got time?
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay. I'll say them quickly. I think that a lot of marketing folks today are, especially leaders, are feeling a little down. They're feeling like the walls are caving in from multiple sides. And also there's this other thing happening where sales kind of like has traditionally gotten preferential treatment in comparison with marketing. And I think that is flipping soon. I think that the era of private equity and VCs and boards where people are using numbers and they're just looking at numbers and they've never been operators in a business and they're saying, this number, make it higher, this number, make it lower. I think that era is coming quickly to a close. I think what it's going to be replaced by is an era that is human in nature. And so this is, we use these analogies. This is the foundational era of SEO. And now we're in the influence era of SEO. In the future, we call it the human era of SEO, which is ironic because it's going to be in a time where AI is generating 99.9% of all written and video content on the internet. So as a marketer, what you have is the greatest opportunity probably since the advent of all of this acquisition and quantification. You have the opportunity to lead in the other direction. If you're focused on what is best for the customer, if you have an intimate knowledge of where they are in their journey, where they hang out online, how you can meet them in each of those steps, that is ultimately what is going to make you more and more successful in the future. So my advice would be hang in there and reject the quantification of your role, because the deep human connection is only going to become more and more important over time. And it's actually, Scott, not going to become more important over time. We're going to remember how central and how important it is in everything that we do. And it's coming because we're going to get an AI era, and that's going to flip us right back into yearning for human connection. I think the snowball has already been pushed down from the mountain there. So as a marketer, how you create emotion, how you make someone feel, how you make someone be taken care of, if you can kind of parry off the P&L piranhas, you know, the budget people who kind of understand this but not this, give them their wins, give them the couple of channels of stuff where it's really clear ROI, and pitch them on a bigger, better tomorrow where you rise above your competition, which, by the way, is what happens in all capitalist markets. You basically have a saturation point, and then it becomes winner take all-ish, and you have the top few winners taking more. How do you become the top few winners without excellence? And so as a marketer, what is going to be required from you is excellence. And it's piggybacking on what you said, Scott. It's not about what are other people doing. It's not about like what else is out there and how can I do that with a twist. It's about what is the best. How can I create the best, and how can I embody that in everything that I do? Because the best is unmistakable. We know exactly what it is. And when we are consumers and we are interacting with the best, I don't know about you, Scott, but I'm like, please take my money immediately.
Yeah, there's no doubt when you see great marketing that it does draw you in. And you know what the funny thing is? As long as I've been in marketing 32 years, I still fall for it. Maybe I'm even more susceptible now because I've seen so much bad marketing that when it's good, it just pulls me right in. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You made a lot of excellent points here. And I'm worried for CMOs these days because they seem to be trying to navigate some pretty choppy waters. And, you know, what does it mean for their teams and their budgets? We saw there was a survey that came out from Gartner, the CMO survey, and budgets are getting slashed now, much smaller than they were in 2023 even. So, you know, what does that mean to marketers? Like, how do they find their niche if they can't identify the target audiences because they have limitations about personalization and data protection and those things along those lines? How do they be more accurate, especially with consumers demanding that accuracy these days? They're like, don't send me stuff that isn't relevant to me. I thought you guys were doing a better job at this. Like, well, it's your fault because you complained about the privacy thing, as which you want, right? And so that, I think it's going to be really tough, you know, for marketers and CMOs. I mean, I don't know if there's any points that you have to add above and beyond that, but I struggle with them taking the old ways that, you know, that worked, and figuring out how do I get more ROI out of it? How do I use technology? How do I shrink my budget and my team, but get more efficiency out of it and more effectiveness? And on top of everything else that they have to do with, you know, vision and strategy and tactics and, you know, analytics and, you know, design and writing. I mean, it's just so many things that a head of marketing needs to pull in addition to looking at the market itself. So it's tough.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Do you have anything to say on that other than maybe you just want to scream and run off to the mic at this point?
I think it's very brutal. And I think marketers more than probably any other, and maybe I'm biased, but any other kind of department are being asked to impact a wider range, because marketing is pretty much asked to impact everywhere else, but on everyone else's timeline. And so, you know, if you're in product, you're like, yeah, we do everything, but we have roadmaps and sprints and we'll work you into it, or, you know, so I think that going back to the basics of understanding in the deepest capacities your customer, and that could mean having 5, 10, 20, literally customers who represent your ICPs, who you are constantly talking to and bouncing ideas off of, and just making sure that that you're operating from the same space that they are, I think stuff like that is going to be really important for companies to do. And I think that there's an internal sales story that you can tell around that and how you can basically be customer driven in how you speak about how you verbalize the standards and the things that you stand for as a brand. And I think you can always be tuned in to what your market is thinking, caring, complaining about, worried about, aspirational towards. And I think that when you have that, then it becomes more straightforward on how to make that appear in your actual channels and where you put budget into. And it also makes it easier for you to make internal arguments on why you need more of this or less of that, because it's based off of data that's like really difficult for someone else to question. It's really hard for somebody to be like, well, all of our customers are saying this, but I think we should do this other thing instead. Like, it's really hard to justify that, taking that perspective a lot of times. So rig it in your favor. So be the one who brings that perspective to the table, and then you become a little bit more bulletproof. You get a little bit more leverage, and your words start to matter a little bit more at the table.
Greg, I could do this with you all day. This has been an incredibly insightful discussion. I think it's a royal straight flush. Okay.
Okay. Amazing. I think I've made a couple of those. I think I've had a couple of those.
Have you really? Actually,
what? I think so. No. And you know what? The problem is when you get those, there's just no good cards for anyone else to have because you have them all. So you don't actually win anything. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because they all fold. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's just out. And you're like, no, just I'll do it for free. Keep playing for free. I just want to show you what I got. It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time today. And, hopefully we'll have you on another one. So for those of you out there, link in with Greg. I'm sure he would love to talk to other CMOs. So Greg Brooks, I'm sure you can find him on LinkedIn. He's a little stealthy. He only has Greg B, but you recognize his face. So, okay. Or maybe not in the podcast. You'll have to watch
just use the context clues.
Yeah.
Just try to understand what I stand for without speaking or looking at me, and then it'll all be perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's Greg B at Search Tides. That's where you'll find him. So I look forward to the next episode that we have coming up. But Greg, maybe we'll tap you in another 6 months for another discussion. This was enlightening, and we'll see what ends up happening with AI and Google. I'm sure Google's got a ton of lawyers to fight the battles for quite some years now. And we'll see where we end up in probably 2029 or something like that.
Right. But, yeah. See you at the end of the decade.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Thanks again, Greg. And tune in next time.